Good morning. Is Hawaii's economy more resilient than expected? Could be, according to the state forecast out today. UHERO's Carl Bonham has the interplay of details that could add up to a brighter economy in 2016. And if you own a smartphone or other device used for work, changes in the federal rules of civil procedure could make your privacy vulnerable. Attorney Stephanie Thompson explains why later this hour. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. With a focus on holiday music, we'll hear from Rob Fisher, guest conductor for this weekend's Hawaii Symphony Holiday Pops Concert. And Kauai Chorale's Christmas program gives the Garden Island's best vocal talent a chance to shine. We'll talk with chorale director Lois Ricciardi.
That's the conversation for this Friday, December 11th. Here's the news. Aloha Friday on The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good morning, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. An awful lot of people use their cell phones as part of their work operations. We certainly do, don't we?
You betcha. And there could be some real issues with that coming up in the near future. Now, there's also a good chance that if you work, you may be using a smartphone or other device that you provide to keep in touch with your company as well as your private life. Businesses often like the fact that employees are happy to buy their own mobile devices, use it for work, and just be reimbursed by the company for the phone's usage. But while the convenience of handheld portable devices, well, that's undeniable, the bring your own device or BYOD trend is creating tensions between how much access an employer can have to the worker-owned device and how much privacy an employee can expect. Attorney Stephanie Thompson has been following the new changes in the federal rules of civil procedure that may make your device vulnerable to your company. She joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Good morning, Chris.
As this has been developing, have a lot of people been paying attention to what the implications would be for not just Hawaii, but just in general? Is this on people's radar?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Beth Ann. And in the recent last 2 years, more and more so with Hawaii Supreme Court decisions coming down directly addressing what the government or police forces can do with respect to accessing somebody's phone in a normal stop or a normal arrest. So yes, it's very much on the radar.
So what exactly can they do now?
Well, with the police, actually, and this was the Supreme Court decision, Riley v. California, once they arrest somebody and they have them in custody and they do have their cell phone, they can secure the cell phone to make sure it's not going to be an explosive device or cause any problems, but they cannot open it and they cannot search it. It was the Chief Justice who wrote the opinion and just said, our whole lives now are contained on this phone. Information access to dates, times, records, pictures, and you cannot just open it and search it. A police cannot without a search warrant. Now, that might be different within the workforce, though, and we're finding different cases come up that expose an employer, an employee to searches on their work forms, just as a normal course. It could be just in the normal course of business.
It seems to be that there could be threats from two different areas. One, from an outside source, someone outside to the employee's company that may be trying to get information. There's security issues in there. And then there's that kind of fuzzy area, too, when you have an employee that may come at odds with its employer. How does that stack up with a phone that the employee or any other device that the employee may be providing and that may be used potentially against that employee?
Well, the way that it's stacking up is basically an employer should have in place, if they're going to allow an employee to use their smartphone, cell phone, then they should have in place a policy that explains exactly what rights they have to that phone. If it's an employer-issued phone, then it can be essentially the employer's phone, and an employee should have no expectation of privacy with the access of that. Employers take huge precautions with respect to they can encrypt their email, segregate the personal from the professional on the phone. With respect to an employee, if I use my own device and it's my own device, you can't expect that everything on that phone is going to be protected and not discoverable by your employer or even somebody suing your company. Very frequently that occurs in employee-employer disputes, in trade secret, intellectual property disputes, where let's say we have an employee, a disgruntled employee who decides they want to take pictures of a book of business or take pictures of trade secrets, and they leave the company, and then very soon after, the employer becomes aware that, hey, something's going on, and the first thing they go get usually is the cell phone. And even though the cell phone may have been, those pictures may have been deleted or transferred or sent, it is easily discoverable with the right technology that those things have been deleted or they exist.
There's also the issue of the intellectual property that may be the employees, something that is developed, a thought or something that just boots through that person's head while he and she may be at work, and they pop it on the phone. Is that also something that might necessarily become then, you know, property or at least discoverable if there's an issue between that employee and the employer?
Well, usually if this is an issue in the business that's being conducted, there is a policy as to, for example, if I work for Pfizer and I create and develop this drug and research, I'm not, you know, that usually becomes the property of Pfizer, or that usually becomes the property of the university for whom I'm working. So there's usually policies in place that would be probably addressed in an employment contract.
But a lot of employees don't have contracts, and they may just have something that's a great thought that may be somewhat related to what they're doing, but not necessarily part and parcel of what they do on a daily basis for their employer.
Exactly. And where that would show up and become the pictures, if I was to download a picture and we were to look at it, what I would see as an IT person is when that image was developed, there's so much that you could tell by how that just got put on your phone, where it came from and everything, that would be telling as to whose thought it was first.
So what I hear you say is that this all really comes back to having a policy in place at the workplace.
Yes, absolutely.
How many employers do you know that really sit down and create this policy? I mean, does that seem to be really the problem now, aren't policies?
There aren't policies. And if you are an employee and you don't know if your employer has a policy, I would go asking for one. In this day and age, when there is so much, over close to 98% of all the information generated is generated in electronic form, that it is just a matter of course that you have to have these policies in place to govern and protect all that electronic information that's flowing within your company and coming into your company and going outside of your company. So employers cannot say, oops, I didn't know. It's something that it's easily done. It's easily dispersed among your employees, and so they're not going to be able to say, oops, I didn't know, I'm sorry, I didn't go get it. In fact, there has been recent case law with respect to certain employers who didn't have these policies in place, and courts have said, shame on you, and they've gone so far as to enter adverse rulings, class action lawsuits, where they essentially gut the entire defense because the employer said, oops, we forgot to gather our employees' cell phones. Yes, those texts were relevant, but oops, they were inadvertently wiped, and we didn't stop it. So it's very serious.
And this behooves both employee and employer, from what you've just said, to have this policy in place and to have it in place pretty soon. Because you also mentioned earlier that the federal rules of civil procedure are tracked by the Hawaii rules of civil procedure. And although they haven't changed yet, it's just a matter of time before that happens.
Exactly. It's just a matter of time. And on December 1st, there was some sweeping changes to the federal rules of civil procedure that became enacted. And these were brought about largely because of the necessities dealing with electronic discovery. And because Hawaii does usually track and look to federal case law for guidance, our cases here are going to look to these laws and rules and the case law to decide how this is going to shake out here in Hawaii and what things and types of rules that we're going to follow here.
Stephanie Thompson, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Stephanie Thompson is a senior litigation counsel at Honolulu law firm Starn O'Toole, Marcus & Fisher. She focuses her practice on complex business and real estate litigation, as well as electronic discovery, which we've been discovering today.
Yes, we have.
Much to perhaps our own peril that we need to go and investigate and find out whether or not a lot of our own companies have one of those policies that cover bringing our own devices. If you want to know more, we've got some more information on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. It's 8:14. Coming up in the show, the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra teams up with Naleo Pili Mehana for a holiday concert. But first, your quiz.
Umurokai, Ulanai, Umau, Ukaholabe, Ohawaii.
Well, it's the holiday season, and what better way to celebrate than perhaps an evening out at a revolving restaurant? Now, in today's backyard quiz, we're spotlighting the work of Seattle architect John Graham Jr. He received his bachelor's in architecture in 1931 during the depths of the Depression, when jobs for architects were scarce. After World War II, Graham and his partner designed the Northgate Shopping Center in Seattle, which became a model for the suburban shopping center. Although the firm went on to specialize in multi-million dollar regional shopping centers and designed over 70 throughout the country, Graham will always be known for the Seattle Space Needle, which boasted what was then the world's third rotating restaurant. See, we got that in there somewhere. And the second in the United States. So to answer today's backyard quiz, we'd like you to name the first revolving restaurant in the United States and where it was built. And yes, it's somewhere in our backyard. Call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. And the first one to get it right gets the T-shirt.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Nohea Gallery and Kaiser Permanente.
Conductor and pianist Rob Fisher's career keeps him on the move, working with orchestras around the country, parachuting into town, putting a performance together, then setting out for the next project, each one with a different cast. It calls for skilled musicianship and a knack for adaptation, and it's brought him to Hawaii as guest conductor for the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra's holiday pop concerts and to our studio this morning. Good morning, Rob. Thanks for coming.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. I love your beautiful island. Any reason to come to your beautiful island is a good one.
It's good to have you. I was thinking about the kind of work you do, which requires you to, as we said, just show up and have a couple of rehearsals, put a show together with group of musicians you've never worked with before, and you do this again and again.
It's an amazing thing, and I've most recently, well, in February, I was in Bulgaria for the second time, which was such a special experience because we didn't have the same language except music.
Uh-huh.
And I never take for granted that when I move my arms, they're going to play.
Yeah.
But there was something really special about the fact that when I moved my arms in Bulgaria,
they
played just the way I wanted them to, just the way any musicians in the world would, with no language used other than gestural.
Which says a lot about music as well as the art of conducting, which I think is something that civilians don't really understand.
There's a lot of mystery to it. There have been a few studies, neurological studies, of what that connection is between musician and orchestra. And I've talked to some people who've written about it. And what's amazing is I can just, without moving my head, I can look in the direction of a musician. They will look up. They can't possibly have seen the movement in my eyelids, and yet they know I'm looking at them. They're just more mysteries than anyone has ever been able to figure out.
There's got to be something extrasensory going on.
There is something extrasensory. And they have done those brain maps, and my brain perceives the end of my body to be the end of the baton, not my hand.
Uh-huh.
So it's the end of the baton. And there and there's an attachment between the end of that baton with those musicians.
Yeah.
But I think there's as much mystery and magic as there is science.
You know, I remember as a kid watching the Leonard Bernstein Young People's concerts in which he explained the orchestra. And he did a thing where he's saying, people wonder what the conductor does. Well, I'm going to conduct a portion, and then I'm going to stop conducting. And the orchestra kind of gradually fell apart. And you could hear it.
And it depends on the piece, really and truly. If it's a piece the orchestra has played many, many times, it's an easy job. My experiences have been often taking music to orchestras they don't generally play because it's crossover and more popular music. I've done a couple of musicals with the New York Philharmonic, and they haven't played Carousel, and they hadn't played My Fair Lady, and they actually were relying on me. And you can feel it on the end of your baton if they're playing because of you or they're just playing.
Yeah, yeah. And with music like that, Broadway music has a different kind of, I want to call it a kind of swing than orchestral music, right? The rhythm is...
Depends on the vintage.
Yeah.
But yeah, often. And pops music, like I'll be doing with the symphony here, definitely has a lot more of that swing.
Mm-hmm.
Although we're doing some pieces from Nutcracker and some more classical type pieces. But orchestras today really have to be able to do everything. And classical orchestras today are beginning to take pride in their ability to swing when necessary.
But you know what I'm saying. There are just radically different rhythmic feels to the different types of music, right?
Yes. I don't, you know, radical is too strong a word for me.
Yeah.
But yes, there are, to be authentically in that style, there are different rhythmic approaches. And it's not just a matter of how short is your eighth note and 16th note.
Right.
But it really has to do with an ongoing flow of the way those rhythms work.
Yeah. How do you transmit that to 66 people all at once?
Boy,
there's
the mystery.
Maybe it's best not to think about it, right?
It seems that there is a way.
Uh-huh.
I'm able to get that result.
Yeah, yeah.
I would not want to spend too much thinking about what I might look like getting that result.
Right. But you have to have you have two rehearsals with the Hawaii Symphony and then the performance. So you have to sort of follow a pretty specific progression of what things you work on when and how you allot your rehearsal time, right?
Yeah, it's really what can I do to help them be the most ready and feel the most comfortable about what they're going to be doing in front of the audience.
Uh-huh.
So the way rehearsal time is used is crucial. And it's that way everywhere in the world. Although Bulgaria you can rehearse a lot more there. But in the United States, rehearsal time is so expensive that every minute has to count, and every minute needs to be directed toward what's going to make them sound the most finessed when it comes time to perform for a paying audience.
So you were telling me the best thing to do is just get up in front of them and start right in, right?
That's, you learn a lot really quickly. They will learn a lot about me really quickly. I'll learn a lot about them really quickly. And then it's just what level of finesse is appropriate. And I hear such wonderful things about this orchestra. And it is holiday music, which doesn't, a lot of it doesn't require incredible virtuosity. But so for me, a lot of it's going to be, let's get in the spirit of this stuff.
I think you'll probably be very happy with the result. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Good,
I'm looking forward
to
it. Yeah, you too.
Rob Fisher is the guest conductor for the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra's Holiday Pops Concert this Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Blaisdell Concert Hall. The vocal trio Naleo Pili Mehana will be the orchestra's special guest.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime in jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air.
What a bright time, it's the right time
to rock the night away.
Jingle bell time is a swell time
to go gliding in a one-horse sleigh.
Everybody loves a winner, but in science, it's the failures that count too. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday to look at why failure is the key to successful science, why science is riddled with mistakes and errors. And that's a good thing. Plus, bad news for bananas. It's a slippery slope on Science Friday from PRI.
This morning from 9 to 11, right after the conversation.
Hawaii Public Radio and the Family Fund of Kapi'olani Medical Center for Women and Children gratefully acknowledge these contributors to the Radio Flyers program. Kelly Holden of Honolulu, John Washburn of Mililani, and Richard Kelly of Pahoa. A total of 420,880 Radio Flyer Hawaiian miles were given to benefit kids and families in need. Thank you all for your generosity.
Support for The Conversation comes from Bank of Hawaii Private Banking, where a personal relationship manager and financial services team provide custom solutions. Learn more about Bank of Hawaii Private Banking at boh.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
As if Hawaii's minority party didn't have enough trouble making its voice heard, a minority ultra-conservative faction in the state is accusing Hawaii's GOP of not being conservative enough. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has the details in today's reality check. Good morning.
Good morning and happy Friday, Bethany.
And you too. Now, this seems to be the national conversation and the national split in many ways in the GOP. Writ small. Is it?
Yeah, it is. That's a good way to put it. I mean, think about it. Donald Trump has just completely dominated the headlines in the Republican race for the presidency. And you have the establishment party, Jeb Bush and others, versus folks like Trump who are outsiders, and then principal candidates like Ted Cruz and others. So it's really fascinating. And there's some concern as to whether Trump will take the party down with him. We'll see. Having said that, remember, Republicans actually control both houses of Congress, and they have a majority of the governorships and the legislatures. Now, contrast that with Hawaii, and Republicans have really never much had any power. Governor Lingle, obviously, for a short spell, and a few people in Congress. So what you have is this faction among local Republicans. They're called the Hawaii Republican Assembly. They're saying the reason we're not getting more folks in office is we're just not really being principled enough. We're not being conservative enough, particularly fiscal issues. And they say that's got to change. And boy, they are really aggravating a lot of people in the so-called establishment part of the local Republican Party.
But then you also have some in that establishment party. I'm thinking about Beth Fukumoto Chang, who we talked to just the other day from Washington, who is saying, you know, look, I'm not supporting Trump. That's not going to be my candidate. And she just said that flat out. And she's talking about where the party is going and how the party needs to change and move both in Hawaii and nationally. So it looks like you've got splinters of splinters.
You absolutely do. And the same is true in the Democratic Party here. There are Hillary Clinton supporters, but also Bernie Sanders. But here, it's all the more ironic because Republicans are such a minority party. So you have the leaders of the Hawaii Republican Assembly, Willis Lee and Tito Montes. They're actually supporting Ted Cruz. And Willis Lee tells us there's actually quite a lot of Trump supporters in Hawaii, too. Contrary to what Representative Fukumoto Chang is saying, there is support. On the other side, you have people like Pat Saiki, the former chair, who is heading up the Jeb Bush campaign, should he make it to the caucuses. And remember, we actually do have a presidential caucus here in Hawaii in March, at which time we'll find out which of these wings, these factions, has the most sway.
At this point, if you had to put money one way or the other, where would you place it?
You mean in terms of who's going to be the presidential candidate?
In terms of which voice really begins to emerge in Hawaii, because you've got a lot of infighting going on.
I think right now there are many, at least from what people like Pat Saiki and others say, that this Hawaii Republican Assembly, they really are a minority. They're a small group. But having said that, those folks say, look, we're growing. And as more dissatisfaction grows, we're going to grow even stronger.
And they could be pretty loud in that growth.
Yes,
thanks
they can.
Very much, Chad. Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat. And in local news of Hawaii, well, our news department is working on what we'll all be hearing next week coming out of HPR. News director Bill Dorman joins me now with a preview. Now, last week we talked about retail. We looked at a lot of the big box retail stuff that was going on. But that also, means that there's an opportunity to see what was happening with smaller boutiques. We heard, coming out of last Saturday with Small Business Saturday and all of that. And I know he's going to have a look at that issue.
Yeah, it's a bigger picture. I mean, I know you got Carl Bonham on deck talking about the economy generally in terms of Hawaii. And retail is such a big part of that picture in a lot of ways. One out of four jobs, I think it is, go in that area. And part of that is on the smaller side. As you say, last week, Noe took a closer look at some of the big folks in Ala Moana and some of the shifts and changes over there. And this coming week, some of the smaller players in there, and a little bit more about how you might be able to buy local, keep some money in the islands over this holiday season, and see how some smaller stores are doing, not just up to now, but also in their outlook as we look at 2016 as well.
What else we have coming up? Look around the islands?
Yeah, Core Kauai, pretty special guest today on a successful community program, Core with a K. They help disabled folks get into the ocean. Once a month at Hanalei Bay on the North Shore, they set up shop, get folks into the water. It's patterned after another great group that does work here on Oahu, Access Surf. The head of Core Kauai, a guy named Kurt Leong, he's a fire captain up in Hanalei, and he's going to be talking this afternoon to Dave Lawrence on All Things Considered, HPR 1, about 10 to 6 on Helping Hand, about this program, about what you can do maybe to help. And he tells this incredible story about putting a quadriplegic person on a surfboard, getting them out onto a wave and back into the shore, and how it takes more than 20 people in that process, because they get the person on the board, looking out for safety, because they're all about safety first, lining the shore on both sides of as the wave comes in. And it's just dramatic, and it's one of those stories that you hear and you just sort of, whatever troubles you think you've been having during the day sort of pale in comparison. And of course, it's a full week. Ledge coming up in January.
Never too early
to start. You know, talking a little bit about that, but we'll have a lot of other things as well.
Good, and some good stories that are good for our soul too. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Bill Dorman is HBO's news director. Looks like Hawaii just got a holiday present it might not have been expecting. In the miasma of international economic news comes a report today that our state economy may be more resilient, perhaps in spite of all that international kerfuffle. The latest annual forecast from the UH Economic Research Organization shows a better-than-expected picture of the year that we will soon leave and a potentially rosier image emerging for 2016. UHERO Executive Director Carl Bonham has the top notes and the overtones. Welcome back.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Looking at the report, it seems like we've got sort of the big three going on, where you have the tourism numbers and numbers that might not necessarily have been expected to continue. Also, construction going probably as full tilt as it's going to go. And then, looking at what may be happening with a labor market. I mean, we've watched all of the unemployment rates just trickle downward ever more so. Can we take some of those apart for a little bit? Let's start with tourism.
So tourism is going to end this year with a new record. We've seen records falling year after year, and it seems like almost every year we look forward and say, gosh, there's just not a whole lot of room for growth. And this year we basically maintained a nearly full Waikiki while adding a whole bunch of airlift to the neighbor islands and strong growth on all the neighbor islands in arrivals. And really all the real visitor spending growth happened on the neighbor islands. Real visitor spending on Oahu actually declined. With all that, with the weakness of the yen and the weakness of other currencies, we didn't really expect that we'd have quite this much growth for 2015. And with the continued weakness in those currencies, that's kind of one of the major international issues with the strength of the dollar. We're looking at not quite so much growth next year from those key non-Japanese international markets that have been such huge growth factors for us.
How does Europe figure into this? Just very briefly, I know that's not a focus, but clearly a lot of people are thinking about what's happening now in Europe.
Yeah, on the visitor, in terms of direct impact to Hawaii, it's very limited. I mean, the real question, people worry about, are we going to lose visitors to Europe because the strength of the dollar? Now there's concerns about terrorism and growing problems associated with migration flows throughout Europe, and so Europe is a bigger issue for the global economy, and particularly their overall economic impact, and we didn't write as much about that in this report. We focused more on the rest of Asia because of its direct influence on Hawaii.
All right, so let's get back to Hawaii and look at the construction market. It seems like finally it got to the point where it was moving pretty much in the direction that we forecast.
The big differences this year are the strength of the job figures. I mean, the permit numbers we've talked about in the past, they're not really a leading indicator anymore, particularly when you're talking about high-rise construction. Those permits tend to come out after the construction is already well underway, or they tend to be officially released by the building department after the construction's well underway. And so some of the real signs of growth there are in the 5%+ growth in jobs and very strong growth, 5%+ growth in real wages in the construction industry. And you were talking about retail a minute ago, and the data we have on retail wage growth has been very strong this year. 9% real wage growth in the retail sector. I think that's through the first half of the year.
All right. Well, while we're talking about wage growth, the projections for this year will be, on average, about 4%?
So total labor earnings, about 4% real growth for this year. And, we've characterized that as likely being the best we're going to see in this cycle. You know, there's some upside and downside potentials there. If we were to see much slower inflation than we expect for next year, you could see real earnings grow stronger in 2016. And, you know, you basically have to know what's going to happen to energy to know what's going to happen to inflation in this environment.
And that's part of it. We sort of got, you know, the gift of having lower oil prices. Clearly, they've been pretty low over the last couple of weeks, especially last week, this week. That is dicey, but still, it's not going to go popping up or shooting up probably anytime soon.
Well, we don't think so. The oil markets, the futures market certainly doesn't think so. I mean, if we're at $40 a barrel, say through the first quarter of next year, that's still a large decrease over the first half of 2015. We were up about $65 a barrel in the beginning of 2015. So there's still room for lower electricity rates, for lower gasoline prices. And if you look at the effects of a 50% decline in energy prices, and we've seen way more than that, you're talking about adding 1% to GDP growth in Hawaii. And so this is benefiting consumers. And so if we were to stay down at that $40 a barrel range, say through the first half or even all of next year, that adds another boost to this forecast that, so we're actually forecasting higher oil prices than that next year. And so that would add a boost to this forecast and could lead next year's real income growth to be even stronger.
Which might make a real difference if you have slow inflation for a lot of people, just
absolutely.
More purchasing power.
Yeah, sure.
Which might make people feel a lot better.
Yeah, when you get those boosts in inflation, you don't tend to get the income growth to go along with it right away. It takes time for that income growth to catch up. And that's part of the reason why our longer-term forecasts for real income growth are a little bit lower, because we're thinking you're going to stop having that drag from lower energy prices. You're going to start seeing the higher rents and higher home prices really show up. And so that's where we get the 3% plus inflation rate in the out years.
Last time we talked, you mentioned that you thought that 2015, as we would look back on it, would be the stellar year, the peak of this cycle. Is this really as good as it gets?
I think if it's not 2015, it's probably going to be 2016. And, we've talked about the fact that this business cycle is kind of getting long in the tooth, and we're well past the average length of an expansion. And so, you start and the construction, rising construction costs, rising prices. What we should see is white rising wages because of lower unemployment. All those things kind of act to start to slow growth as we get out into 2017, 2018, and whether 2015 is the best year or 2016 ends up being the best year, we won't complain if it's 2016, right, if we get another strong year. But this probably is as good as it gets in this cycle in terms of growth rates.
And so as people are planning for business growth, as they're looking at personal expenditures moving into 17, 18, 19, the end of this decade, your advice to them would be?
Well, you have to plan for things to slow down a little bit, right? And of course, it depends on which sector you're in. If you're serving the Japanese market, it may very well get better because the yen stops depreciating at the rate it has been. But you have to expect that the farther out we go, we're going to start sort of converging on a growth rate that's consistent with a population growth rate of sub 1% statewide, stronger on the neighbor islands, less on Oahu. And so, you're going to have less job growth, less real income growth, something in the neighborhood of 2% overall growth instead of 4%.
So enjoy it now while it lasts, potentially for the next year or so, and keep your eye on the end of the decade and make really good plans.
Yeah.
If that's possible. Carl, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carl Bonham was a founding member of UHERO in 1997 and is currently its executive director. He's also a professor of economics.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Whole Foods Market Hawaii and Ulupono Initiative.
This morning, we asked you to name the country's first revolving restaurant and to tell us where in the islands it was located. The restaurant was conceived and designed by Seattle architect John Graham. He was an early shopping mall pioneer, now best known for designing the Space Needle, built for the 1962 World's Fair, and it had its own revolving restaurant. In 1964, Graham was awarded a U.S. patent for the technology that made his revolving restaurants possible. At the time, Hawaii's revolving restaurant was being built. Ala Moana Shopping Center, situated right below it, was known as the largest shopping center in the U.S. The name we were looking for this morning was La Ronde, which opened for business on the 23rd floor of the Ala Moana building in November of 1961. Although La Ronde has been closed for decades and the space no longer resolved, the disc still sits atop the Ala Moana building as a reminder of its glory days.
And Alice Tucker from Aina Haina remembered those days. Her husband was a doctor who was an original tenant in the building, she said, and had an office in the Ala Moana building on the 7th floor. So Alice Tucker gets the T-shirt. Thanks very much for the call and for playing with us with the backyard quiz. Now, if you've got a backyard quiz for us, please send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Achieve 3000, announcing their annual Literacy Leadership Conference and student celebrations, February 1st through 4th on Kauai, Maui, Hawaii Island, and Oahu. Achieve3000.com/Hawaii.
Lois Ricciardi, director of the Kauai Chorale, loves to work with singers who are still developing, and she works to aid in that development. She's got 27 years in as director of the Volunteer Chorale. She's in the home stretch of preparing its holiday concert, Christmas Wishes. She's on the line from Kauai this morning. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Sure. I was struck by this quote I read from you saying you'd actually rather work with a developing singer than one who had already reached a level of excellence. A lot of people would say just the opposite.
Well, there is certainly pleasure and reward in both, but what I find with our chorale, since we have such a varied group of people, from those who cannot even find their line when they first come in to professionals and semi-professionals, that they don't even think they will make it through the season to perform, mm-hmm. and they are so thrilled when we come from a level of not knowing what we're doing to a really high-polished chorus by the end of the season, in this case, Christmas season. And that, to me, is a very rewarding thing, to watch people grow into doing things they never thought they could.
I would think it would also take an awful lot of work.
Yes.
can't see how it would not, right?
Right.
But you're a volunteer chorale, and you don't have an audition process. You welcome everyone, is that right?
We do, and those who really don't feel that they can make it will kind of bow out before the end of the season. So we really don't have too many problems to deal with, and everyone helps each other, and they learn their parts.
When you say that you have people who, as you say, can't, when they start out, really can't find their line, what are the first things that you can have to work on with them?
We learn pitch. We learn through our warm-ups how to read up and down, and they learn from each other so that I make sure I position them in a place where they're sitting next to someone who can be very helpful and not someone who is equally lost. So we do have a core network of singers that come year after year, and they are very helpful. And it's really become like a family.
You can, a beginning singer can benefit a lot from being placed next to a strong singer, can't they?
Yes, they certainly can.
What is it about that, Lois? What is it about the presence of, you know, is it just that you can hone in on the pitch from hearing it right next to you, or is there more to it than that?
I would say there's probably a lot to that, but yes, they can hone in on the pitch. It also gives them confidence. They hear it. If they learn only through repetition, they hear it from a singer who has good pitch, good rhythm, and then they start to build their confidence. And they start to learn how to read, and it's amazing how they learn how to read. I do teach piano full-time, so I'm well aware of beginner students of how they learn, and it's just amazing. I think it's an amazing group of people.
How many voices have you got now?
This season, it looks like we have about 85 plus.
Mm-hmm. And how does that divide up in terms of basses and baritones? And
we have, this season, we're fortunate to have quite a good tenor bass section. Our smallest section, I would say, would be the sopranos. And yet we have some outstanding sopranos this season. And so there's really a glorious sound coming from our sopranos section. So we have quite a good balance, and I just always pray that it works out, and it does.
Well, I'm sure it does. I'm just, you know, over those years, Lois, I'm wondering, for example, which is hardest to find? Are bass singers the rarest? I would think there'd be more sopranos than good bass singers, for example.
That has changed over the years, which is an interesting thing, and I don't know the answer.
Huh.
It used to be easy to find sopranos because everyone thought if they couldn't read that they were a soprano. And then it was very difficult to find tenors. Then it got, for a while, difficult to find basses. This season we're balanced. Why? I don't know.
Something in their diet, perhaps. Or who,
it could be.
Who knows, right?
Yes.
When you put together a holiday program, you have all kinds of choices, and that goes from the very, the very intense classical inspirational works to very light holiday fare. How do you kind of find a mix for that?
That, I would say, would be the hardest part of my job, and I feel pretty good about my programming. We have done some intense classical works, and this year I felt strongly about pulling on John Rutter's Reluctant Dragon, which is light, but it's still good music by John Rutter.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have a dragon, and we will have St. George and
a boy.
So we have a drama within the story, and an excellent narrator, Arnold Meister, who has done a lot with theater. And he also was the second conductor of the Koi Chorale. So he is still with us from time to time, very busy man. And the costuming was done by one of our costume people, dress people on Kauai, Chanterelle Shantara. And it's going to be quite a production. And that's only one part of our performance this year.
So it sounds as if you've really incorporated some theatrical elements into all this.
Yes, we have. And I thank Arnold Meister for the help on the theatrics part.
Well, which really does a lot to draw an audience in, doesn't it, Lois?
Yes, it does. It does. We also have a tango by one of our local doctors, Dr. Douglas Duvichel and Jeanette Bonilla. They will be doing a tango with one of our pieces. And our special guests are going to be the Tongan Youth Choir. And my only concern is that they're going to show us up because they are excellent. And I say that jokingly, of course, that they are a wonderful bunch of young people that will be joining us.
Well, Lois, have a great time. It sounds as if you've got quite a show put together. So
we really
now
hope
and then,
to present
yeah?
a lovely concert to the public.
Well, thanks for taking the time.
Well, I thank you for having me be a part of your show this morning.
Sure. Lois Ricciardi is the director of the Kauai Chorale, which is presenting its holiday concert, Christmas Wishes, Saturday, December 19th at 7:30 in the Kauai Community College Performance Arts Center, and again at the St. Regis Hotel Ballroom in Princeville on the 20th at 5 p.m. The chorale's accompanist is Virginia Shepherd.
An All Things Considered story starts with the news.
Two women set to become the first female Army Rangers ever.
That day, we wanted to follow it with a conversation from a woman who was in the military.
So we just email everybody.
Whittle it down to one. We get her on the phone.
Welcome to the program, Sergeant Marquez.
Thank you very much, Audie.
I want to start just with your reaction.
There's more to every story on All Things Considered every afternoon.
Weekday afternoons from noon to 2.
Bethann, it really raised some interesting issues because about cell phone usage on the job and how your private cell phone intersects with your use of it for work. And, of course, an awful lot of people have an overlap in that area, don't they?
You're talking about our very first interview this morning with attorney Stephanie Thompson, who was talking about, you know, some of the changes to the rules that might mean that what's on your cell phone, if you use it for work and personal use, and there's a lot of, you know, fuzzy area there, might be discoverable if there were a lawsuit involving your company or whether there were a kerfuffle between you and your company.
Yeah, or even perhaps vice versa, something involved you could involve your company, I would think, by extension. But
or potential security risks, all of that.
Sure.
And so that's going to be an ongoing issue because, as she said, many, many companies are just delighted that their employees are willing to purchase this stuff and just say, hey, will you help me out with you know, paying for the data plan or whatnot, but that they might get some reimbursement. But as part of the package, that may also mean that these items are going to be very much in the mix if something happens and they need to get data pulled off of it. You might be vulnerable.
And the fact that all the information, most of the information transmitted these days is done electronically, that has vast implications.
Yeah, including what privacy really means these days. But that's another conversation. That's going to do it for us for this week. Coming on Monday, HSTA has been working on introducing sweeping education omnibus bill, I should say, for the next legislative session. We're going to talk with HSTA President Corey Rosenley.
And we'll have an in-studio visit from Streetlight Cadence.
And we're also happy to hear from you at any time. You can reach us on the TalkBack line. That's 808-792-8217 or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
If you want to hear today's show again, get another past show or links to more information, check the archive on the HPR website, hpr2.org. Our executive producer is Bethann Kozlovich.
Lillian Song produces the program. Taylor Rice is our production assistant. And Caitlin DiCuma is our research assistant.
The Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. And I'm Chris Vander.
I'm Bethann Kozlovich. We'll see you Monday when we pick up the conversation.